Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 5, Chapter X1X19. Having returned to the regiment and told the commander the state of Denisov's affairs, Rostov rode to Tilsit with the letter to the Emperor. On the 13th of June, the French and Russian emperors arrived in Tilsit. Boris Drubetskoy had asked the important personage on whom he was in attendance to include him in the suite appointed for the stay at Tilsit. "I should like to see the great man," he said, alluding to Napoleon, whom, with hitherto, he, like everyone else, had always called Bonaparte. "You are speaking of Bonaparte?" asked the general, smiling. Boris looked at his general inquiringly and immediately saw that he was being tested. "I am speaking, Prince, of the Emperor Napoleon," he replied. The general patted him on the shoulder with a smile. "You will go far," he said, and he took him to Tilsit with him. Boris was among the few present at the Niemen on the day the two emperors met. He saw the raft decorated with monograms, saw Napoleon pass before the French guards on the farther bank of the river, saw the pensive face of the Emperor Alexander as he sat in silence in a tavern on the bank of the Niemen, awaiting Napoleon's arrival, and saw both emperors get into boats, and saw how Napoleon, reaching the raft first, stepped quickly forward to meet Alexander and held out his hand to him, and how they both retired into the pavilion. Since he had begun to move in the highest circles, Boris had made it his habit to watch attentively all that went on around him and to note it down. At the time of the meeting at the Tilsit, he asked the names of those who had come with Napoleon and about the uniforms they wore, and listened attentively to words spoken by important personages. At the moment the emperors went into the pavilion, he looked at his watch and did not forget to look at it again when Alexander came out. The interview had lasted 1 hour and 53 minutes. He noted this down that same evening, among other facts he felt to be of historic importance. As the emperor's suite was a very small one, it was a matter of great importance for a man who valued his success in the service to be at Tilsit on the occasion of this interview between the two emperors. And, having succeeded in this, Boris felt that henceforth his position was fully assured. He had not only become known, but people had grown accustomed to him and accepted him. Twice he had executed commissions to the emperor himself, so that the latter knew his face, and all those at court, far from cold-shouldering him, as at first when they considered him a newcomer, would now have been surprised had he been absent. Boris lodged with another adjutant, the Polish Count Zielinski. Zielinski, a Pole brought up in Paris, was rich and passionately fond of the French, and almost every day of the stay at Tilsit, French officers of the guard and from French headquarters were dining and lunching with him and Boris. On the evening of the 24th of June, Count Zielinski was giving a supper to his French friends. The guest of honour was an aide-de-camp of Napoleon's. There were also several French officers of the guard, and a page of Napoleon's, a young lad of an old aristocratic French family. That very day, Rostov, profiting by the darkness to avoid being recognized in civilian dress, came to Tilsit and went to the lodging occupied by Boris and Zielinski. Rostov, in common with the whole army from which he came, was far from having experienced the change of feeling towards Napoleon and the French, who, from being foes, had suddenly become friends. That had taken place at headquarters and in Boris. In the army, Bonaparte and the French were still regarded with mingled feelings of anger, contempt, and fear. Only recently, talking with one of Platov's Cossack officers, Rostov had argued that if Napoleon were taken prisoner, he would be treated not as sovereign, but as a criminal. Quite lately, happening to meet a wounded French colonel on the road, Rostov had maintained with heat that peace was impossible between a legitimate sovereign and the criminal Bonaparte. Rostov was therefore unpleasantly struck by by the presence of French officers in Boris's lodging, dressed in uniforms he had been accustomed to see from quite a different point of view from the outposts of the flank. As soon as he noticed a French officer who thrust his head out the door, that warlike feeling of hostility which he always experienced at the sight of the enemy suddenly seized him. He stopped at the threshold and asked, in Russian, whether Drubetskoy lived there. Boris, hearing a strange voice in the anteroom, came out to meet him. An expression of annoyance showed itself for a moment on his face, on first recognizing Rostov. "Ah, it's you? Very glad to see you," he said, however, coming towards him with a smile. But Rostov had noticed his first impulse. "I've come at a bad time, I think. I should not have come. But I have business," he said coldly. "No, I only wonder how you managed to get away from your regiment. Dans un moment je suis à vous," he said, answering someone who called him. That translates to, "In a minute, I'll be at your disposal." "I see I'm intruding," Rostov repeated. The look of annoyance had already disappeared from Boris's face. Having evidently reflected and decided how to act, he very quietly took both Rostov's hands and led him into the next room. His eyes, looking serenely and steadily at Rostov, seemed to be veiled by something, as if screened by blue spectacles of conventionality. So it seemed to Rostov. "Oh, come now, as if you could come at a wrong time," said Boris. And he led him into the room where the supper table was laid, and introduced him to his guests, explaining that he was not a civilian, but an hussar officer and an old friend of his. "Count Zelinsky, le Count N.N. le Capitaine S.S.," said he, naming his guests. Rostov looked frowningly at the Frenchman, bowed reluctantly, and remained silent. Zelinsky evidently did not receive this new Russian person very willingly into his circle, and did not speak to Rostov. Boris did not appear to notice the constraint the newcomer produced, and with the same pleasant composure and the same veiled look in his eyes with which he had met Rostov, tried to enliven the conversation. One of the Frenchmen, with the politeness characteristic of his countrymen, addressed the obstinately taciturn Rostov, saying that the latter had probably come to Tilsit to see the Emperor. "No, I came on business," replied Rostov briefly. Rostov had been out of humour from the moment he noticed the look of dissatisfaction on Boris's face, and as always happens to those in bad humour, it seemed to him that everyone regarded him with aversion and that he was in everybody's way. He really was in their way, for he alone took no part in the conversation, which again became general. The looks the visitors cast on him seemed to say, "And what is he sitting here for?" He rose and went up to Boris. "Anyhow, I am in your way," he said in a low tone. "Come and talk over my business and I'll go away." "Oh no, not at all," said Boris. "But if you are tired, come and lie down in my room and have a rest." "Yes, really." They went into the little room where Boris slept. Rostov, without sitting down, began at once, irritably, as if Boris were to blame in some way, telling him about Denisov's affair, asking him whether, through his general, he could and would intercede with the Emperor on Denisov's behalf and get Denisov's petition handed in. When he and Boris were alone, Rostov felt for the first time that he could not look Boris in the face without a sense of awkwardness. Boris, with one leg crossed over the other and stroking his left hand with the slender fingers of his right, listened to Rostov as a general listens to the report of a subordinate, now looking aside and now gazing straight into Rostov's eyes with the same veiled look. Each time this happened, Rostov felt uncomfortable and cast down his eyes. "I have heard of such cases and know that His Majesty is very severe in such affairs. I think it would be best not to bring it before the Emperor, but to apply to the commander of the corps. But in general, I think..." "So you don't want to do anything? Well, then say so," Rostov almost shouted, not looking Boris in the face. Boris smiled. "On the contrary, I will do what I can, only I thought..." At that moment, Zelinsky's voice was heard calling Boris. "Well then, go, said Rostov, and refusing supper, and remaining alone in the little room, he He walked up and down for a long time, hearing the light-hearted French conversation from the next room. All right, there we have it, another chapter down, and hasn't Boris come a long way? Brian E. Denton, in his Medium article, which is a very good article for this chapter about Boris, said that he was the model of career advancement, and noted how he will use everyone as a networking tool. Even when Rostov turns up, at first he's kind of annoyed to see him, but very quickly rearranges his face and becomes hospitable, because, you know, who knows, maybe Rostov will be a good contact to have one day. And he's advanced through his career by being in the right place at the right time. Whenever something important is going down, he's there, looking busy, looking like he's meant to be there, and just getting people used to his face being, you know, around in the background when the most important things are happening, like a meeting of the emperors. He's also progressed his career by knowing how to keep everyone happy. For example, at the beginning of this chapter, his general asked him, is he going to call Napoleon Bonaparte or Bonaparte? Now, one is the one that Bonaparte prefers, and one is the name that he doesn't like being called. But, of course, you can't really choose the correct one, because the one, the derogatory one, is the one that all the Russians want you to call him, and the preferred one is the one that all the French want you to call him. So you can't really pick one to please everyone, can you? Because at the moment there's this peace treaty, so you want to actually make everyone happy. You're playing both sides. So he says, I will be calling him Emperor Napoleon. And that's how it's done. You avoid any situation where someone might get upset, and you choose the option that keeps everyone happy. But it didn't take Rostov long to see that Boris is a little bit disingenuous. He saw it immediately, that look on his face that quickly got rearranged to become hospitable. Rostov knows that Boris is playing the game. And I wonder if everyone else can sort of see that as well, or if he's doing a good enough job of fooling everyone else. Matthew Law said, I don't know how close they were before, but the tension between Boris and Nikolai feels like what happens when close friends drift apart and both develop in different directions to each other. I guess a close analogue here could be developing opposing political views and then meeting again, knowing that had they not previously been so close, they would never now become friends with each other. Yeah, Boris didn't really do much to help Nikolai. He did say he was going to help, but I still feel like Rostov is going to take matters into his own hands and maybe try to go over Boris's head. Hey, wasn't it cool to see Rostov not explode in this chapter? When the door opened and the Frenchmen were there and he felt the same feeling of facing your enemies on the battlefield, he kept his cool. Very un-Rostov. Maybe the boy is growing. That was cool to watch. Anyway, I'm going to leave this chapter there. Thanks very much for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.